Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coffee Party Radio Show. This afternoon we have Politics Done Right. Your typical host, longtime host Egberto Willis, is not available today. I am Lee Beaumont, hosting the show from Middletown, New Jersey, and we have co-host Sally Swisher with us. So welcome to Politics Done Right, the Coffee Party Radio. We'll get started here in just a minute. We have a number of topics to talk about. They're all related to Syria. And I know Syria has been all over the news, and you're probably sick and tired of it. So we're trying to talk about some things that are a little bit different. I wonder how many listeners got a chance to take a look at the British House of Commons debate the other day. On Tuesday, August 29th, the British House of Commons debated a motion on Syria for more than 8 hours. Prime Minister David Cameron opened the debate. The opposition leader, Ed Miliband, responded on behalf of the official opposition. But the debating style that they use in the House of Commons is very different from what we're used to seeing here in our own House of Representatives. A couple things. First off, almost all the members of Parliament are there. So you've got hundreds of people in this one hall. And and they face each other. It's like a basketball stadium. And the speaker is or at least the topic leader, is in the middle of the floor. And the presenter will may be reading from a script or so on, or reading a position paper, but he's interrupted very often. People raise their hand and they're recognized and they ask questions. It's a very lively debate. They're actually, it seems to me, engaged with each other, listening to each other, raising questions as they come up, responding to the questions, trying to get to a common understanding. So my question is, does the British style provide for a better informed decision? When we watch the Americans in the Congress, whether it's in the House or in the Senate, very often you'll see one congressman standing, lecturing, almost no one else in the hall, and they're playing to the camera, and there's no interaction. Do the British get to a better debate? Sally, are you there? Did you get a chance
to
look
at the... Yeah, I'm there. Hello. Hi. Yeah, I think it's fascinating. They also seem to feel no restrictions on expressing their approval or disapproval, which I always enjoy.
It's called heckling, and it's actually part of the debate technique. And there's rules for when you say yes and you shout out shame, and there's rules for all of this. And it's taught in debate school. I believe that that's true. But I think only Englishmen can do it properly. But it demonstrates their engagement and shows their enthusiasm without the kind of cruel
right. It's like
dialogue
it's sort
that goes
of like
on
a
there.
Game, but people get to express their opinion, and it's very engaging. I always enjoy watching because it kind of brings, you know, in the United States a long time ago, politics was also entertainment, you know. And people were more engaged because it was fun. It was interesting. And I think that the style of having people able to be part of the debate and express what they think is so helpful.
And it went on for 8 hours, and they were all there. They were probably engaged the whole time. The video is available online. You can search for it, and it'll come right up. I'll probably... after the show, maybe put a link to it. I did not watch the whole 8 hours, but what was maybe important that came out of this is that the vote, by the way, David Cameron was, his position was that he was seeking authorization to move forward with military action in Syria, actually to go to a next step, and we'd even need a second vote. Opposition was saying, no, we don't want to do this. And what is surprising is that after 8 hours of this lively debate, David Cameron, the prime minister, with the majority party speaking for it, the motion failed. In fact, it failed by kind of a lot. It was was 332 opposed to 220 in favor of it, a gap of 69 votes. So it's rather surprising because he has the majority party. This was an important agenda item for them. The people were there, and they basically voted against his point of view on that. And that was Wednesday, a week and a half ago. We know on, what unfolded after that is on Friday, a week ago, we heard from John Kerry, who gave a passionate argument for military action. We saw the president on Saturday saying he would like to go in, but he wants congressional support. And then at least the Senate came back, and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted on this. Now, something that is interesting, John McCain, and I mention him not entirely to single him out, but he's a well-known senator. He gets national attention. He's very interested in foreign policy. We know he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam for a very long time and so on. He's on the Foreign Relations Senate Committee. He's been hearing deliberations on this, but he held a town hall meeting in his he's a senator from Arizona. He held a town hall meeting in Phoenix, Arizona, to hear what his constituents were thinking about. And they were very, very strongly opposed to military action. They stood up. They made their points vociferously. They engaged him in as much of a shouting match as you would do in polite company. They were unanimously opposed to this. And then when he went back to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he voted to authorize limited force against Syria in Syria. He voted to authorize the president to use limited force in the committee. So what's interesting here is we think of democracy as we elect representatives, they listen to what we have to say, and they go forward and they represent us. And it's not a direct democracy, it's a representational democracy. We hire thoughtful people, or I believe that democracy works best, politics works best when you hire thoughtful people to do this. But here's a case where he had the town meeting, presumably to hear what people said. I assume that the calls to his office and poll results that he saw are similar to this. It was very strongly against moving forward, yet he voted to do that. So why did he do that? Is he just always a hawk? Is it that he's being a statesman and he's using his judgment and courage to substitute for his greater wisdom, to substitute for what the populace might be thinking? Is he just a mercenary in the pockets of the military? Sally, any thoughts on this?
No, I'm wondering about the link between the populace and the representatives. I'm wondering if the election system in Britain actually is part of the reason that the British representatives seem to be more responsive to their constituents, because United States elected officials seem to feel no fear of their constituents on many, many issues. It's like they think they can deal with it with advertising, or I don't know exactly, but they really don't seem to care what their constituents think about anything that is complicated in any way. you know? And maybe that's because of the way the election systems work, because in Britain it's quite different, is it not? I mean, they have a short time span for elections. Are they publicly funded?
My understanding, and I don't know a lot about this, my understanding is that it is a shorter, and basically you vote in the whole party so that David Cameron is in power and his majority is there, and he's there until there's a vote of no confidence, which is kind of an interesting thing. So he's got the ball. So it's sort of like the House and the Senate and the presidency all being on the same party, and they've got the ball until they're voted out. So it is maybe a little bit more secure until you screw up. I have a little bit of an interesting anecdote. Let me take a minute and welcome our callers. We invite you to call in at 646-929-2495. Welcome to Coffee Party Radio. This is Politics Done Right. Normally, this is hosted by Egberto Willis. He's off today. I am Lee Beaumont with co-host Sally Swisher. So we do welcome our callers. If you would like us to take your call, please press 1, and I can notice that, and I can free you up. But back to whether or not our representatives represent us, I do have a little bit of an anecdote that may shed some light on this. I went to grade school and high school with a very fine person who became a congressman for the district actually where I grew up in for 12 years. He was very well liked. I'm not going to mention his name because of the following story. We've remained in touch. I saw him at a high school reunion about 2 years ago. And he was willing to talk to me as a good old friend rather than as a politician. And I opened our conversation by asking him, I said, with him gone, are there any statesmen left in Congress? And he kind of laughed at that. But we talked about this idea of representation, and he told me, he said that he would be in favor of some legislation, he might promote some legislation, and he would go to a colleague in the same party and say, can you vote with me on this? And the other congressman would say, no, it's my district isn't thinking that way, it isn't leaning that way, and I'm here to represent the people, which, by the way, is just the opposite of the example we gave here with John McCain. But what my friend, the former congressman, would say is, I'm going to vote my conscience on this, and I'm going to do it for very good reasons. And the next time I'm giving a town hall meeting or meeting with my constituents, I'm going to explain to them the reason that I went through this and the reason that I went through to make this vote and the reason I voted the way that I did. And I believe that if I'm acting as a statesman, if I'm using good reason in that, if I'm integrating all the information that I have and I can explain this to the people, that's the way to go. So there's a congressman, he was very well liked, by the way, who was not robotic in poll the people, vote that way, but move forward, but used what I'll call statesmanship as some judgment in there. So I think it's a little bit tricky. I think that the congressmen vote the way they want to based on lots of things, and if that's the way their people, their constituency are voting, they can use that as a reason. If they have some other reason, they can use that as a reason. And it really brings into question the importance or the weight of representing your folk.
It sounds like your friend is no longer in Congress.
What happened is that after 12 years, six sessions, he decided not to run again. It's not that he was voted down. He decided not to run again. It was... my parents still live in the district, so I got to see in the papers. There were a lot of people were disappointed. They liked him, but he's now a lobbyist. He makes a lot more money, but he actually told me, and this is kind of scary, he told me he believes he is more influential as a lobbyist than he was as a congressman. As a congressman, he gets one vote. He gets one vote. As a lobbyist, you could talk to all 435.
Right, and lobbyists have a huge influence.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a scary thing. Now, what's good is he's a very good person. I think he's trying to do the right thing, but we know the Coffee Party is interested in money and politics, and here's a guy who is a well-loved congressman, gives it up to get about five times the salary as a lobbyist.
Wow.
I think that's all public record, so I'm not speaking out of school
here. And even if he's a principled individual, which it sounds like he is, now he has a job, and he has a responsibility to his employers to represent their point of view, which is a completely different. I mean, it's kind of like the reason that I'm so worried about corporations being declared people, because they have a legal mandate to value profit above all else.
Correct.
And that is such a scary kind of thing, because even if they are doing the, quote, correct and legal thing, they are then working for something that may not be in the best interests of everybody, you know?
That's correct.
And that's so scary to me. So it is very scary.
So let's get back to why would John McCain
right.
vote differently? Okay, financially he's secure. Okay, he literally lost count of how many houses he owns. Right, so financially
right.
he is secure. Politically, I think he's secure. And even if he were to lose his position, he's had a long distinguished career, and he could exit gracefully. So I think that there's that. So to me, it seems like he's above monetary influence, almost political influence. Now, he is a standard bearer of the Republican Party, but he kind of voted with the president rather than against it here and so on. So it gets tricky. So it just might be that he has the philosophy of a hawk. I mean, he might be a very principled man. He might believe, he served in Vietnam. He's been on the interested in foreign policy for a long time. He has visited many of these countries. He may simply believe that you don't cross the line on the chemical weapons. That can't go unpunished, and we need to go in here. Could be.
Do you think that the complexity of the Syrian issue feeds into a likelihood that the Congress will authorize force?
Couple things. Number one, I am encouraged by the debate that I see or dialogue that I see everywhere. The snippets you get in Congress, the talk shows that you get, the newscasts that you get, the people in the street. This seems more nuanced than some of the stupid talk that you get, polarized stupid talk that you get during the election season. So I think that people sense the complexity or the dilemma here. And you don't see people saying, nuke them till they glow, it's the only answer. You don't see those extreme positions coming out. You see a lot of talk of what our alternatives are. That's a good thing.
I'm a little bit puzzled.
I lost the core of your question.
Well, I'm a little bit puzzled by the fact that polling seems to indicate that the American people are against going into this. But I am not seeing as much resistance to a military action on our part as I would sort of expect to. And I'm also, I know that I went to one rally against war, and a lot of the people there were actually sort of on the Assad side of the argument, which is not really where I wanted to be, And I was kind of thinking, well, gee, where is it that a more mainstream stance of I just don't want us to get involved in this in a military way, but I'm not necessarily an Assad supporter.
Right.
So where is that action? And I think a lot of people have that problem.
Right. So on that, let me just mention a couple of things. Number one, there are several hands-off Syria anti-war actions planned for this weekend, including a gathering or protest perhaps at Times Square at 1 p.m. today. So if you're at that rally or if you're one of these rallies around the country and you can call in and tell us what's happening at those rallies, that will be good. The second thing I want to mention, and I've mentioned this on the Middle Ground previously, our daughter, that's my wife and my daughter, is a pilot in the U.S. Air Force. She's active. She has flown many combat missions over the Middle East, and I just want to bring that out because it may be relevant to the context that I bring to this kind of thing. I won't identify her further because she asks me not to, but I will say that she's an excellent pilot, and I'm sure she'll be safe regardless of what happens in Syria, but I just wanted to bring that out. So back to your point, is this, go to war, don't go to war, military action, not military action, and so on. And it may depend what news sources you get, but I'm encouraged by the number of emails I get and blog posts I see and so on that are talking about a nuanced approach here. For example, and I'll mention that, I'll repeat here a couple of things I mentioned on the middle ground recently. I would like to see at least dialogue, if not action, that follows up on international law. Okay? There is a there are several international treaties that prohibit the use of chemical weapons. There is the Geneva Protocol, which was drafted in 1925 and signed in 1925, that prohibits the use of chemical weapons. More recently, there's a Chemical Weapons Convention that has been ratified by 65 states and signed by 165 states. Turns out Syria signed the Geneva Protocol but did not sign the Chemical Weapons Convention. And it basically says you don't use chemical weapons. So when these treaties are signed by so many countries, 165 signatories and 189 parties to it, that says we all agree the use of chemical weapons is a bad thing, then where are these people now? Why can we not convene a coalition? So I have an email that was sent to me by the Peace Alliance highlighting 10 Syria questions for Kerry and Hagel that was written actually by the Friends Committee on National Legislation, which is a Quaker lobby in the public interest. And they give 10 questions, which are, the Quakers, of course, are fundamentally peace-loving people. They are, I'm from Pennsylvania, by the way, and I have some friends who are Quakers, although I'm not a practicing one myself. But it's something that you hear about. So their first question is, has the Obama administration considered convening a meeting of state parties to the Chemical Weapons Convention to respond to the violations in Syria? All 189 signatories have the obligation to respond to violations collectively, and the U.S. has the responsibility to work with a broad international coalition to uphold the universal prohibition on the use of chemical weapons. Why aren't we doing that? I think that's an excellent question. What we hear is that we need UN sanction to do this, that Russia will vote no on the UN sanction, so that's it for international law. But I think that's too cut and dried. I don't think that is thinking enough about what the options are.
Actually, I want to interject one thing here. In the news on the 4th, Putin said that he might be willing to go along with UN action if it was proved by the UN investigators that chemical weapons had been used. And I don't remember whether he said and who used them. I think he probably did.
Yeah, he may have. He's caged.
Which the UN might or might not be able to find out. But that's a willingness on the part of Russia that has not been expected.
Let's take a caller. I see a caller here from area code 908. Area code 908, you're on Coffee Party Radio with Lee Beaumont and Sally Swisher. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what's on your mind.
John from New Jersey.
Okay.
You just mentioned something about the treaty that was signed for the chemical. What year was that again?
Well, there's the Chemical Weapons Convention, which was actually drafted in 1992 and signed in 1993, became effective in 1997
by
189. Many of the nations. Actually, there's only a few that did not sign it.
Like Syria and a few others.
Yeah, Syria and a few others. I don't have it right at my fingertips here. But they all signed it, and the purpose of that is to, you know, basically get rid of stockpiles of chemical weapons, which is a very good thing. So prohibition of the production and use of chemical weapons, destruction of chemical weapons production facilities, destruction of all chemical weapons that are existing, assistance, this is important, assistance between state parties and the OPCU in case of use of chemical weapons, and an inspection regimen for the production of chemicals which might be converted, and cooperation on the peaceful use of chemistry in relevant areas. So here's a convention put in place, Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, signed by a lot of countries. And how are we doing on this, right? I mean, it was used.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I'm a liberal Democrat, but I'm not like a total progressive, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, I guess if you pose a question to somebody who's progressive, I'm not sure, you know, someone there, or, okay, you say to someone progressive, or, you know, what about considering what Hitler did to the Jewish people? Would you go after him? What would people say, of course? They would say yes, right?
Right.
Then you would say Milosevic, considering what he did, what would you do? And most people, I guess, would say yes. Now, on a thing like this, people are saying no, which I find a little ridiculous, that we're not supporting to go after, which something we've all, as all these nations and us, have said, you know, that we need to go after. Now, with what happened with Iraq, you know, that's very controversial, okay, you know, and that was one thing. And if people in this country think they were duped on that, okay, that's one thing. But we all agreed to this, and the president stated that. This is something that we agreed to, that if it occurred and happened, we would basically, if we needed to, gain support, but through the UN and our other allies, maybe not through the UN, but just our allies. but, you know, we might just let go it alone, and why not, you know?
I would like to say something about that, because when we signed this chemical weapons agreement in the 90s, we were agreeing, and all these other countries were agreeing, that if chemical weapons were used, then the signatories to that treaty would be deciders about what would happen. We didn't sign on to say that we, the United States, would enforce. I don't even know if that agreement had an enforcement clause.
Yeah,
it sounds like it partially did. But
hold on.
You know,
are you saying that 189 countries absolutely are going to always then meet like the together? And if they don't meet together, then they won't do it? Because that's not true.
I don't know. But what I'm trying to say is that we never agreed that we were going to. United States, will act for this organization, and I don't think any other signatories have either.
Yeah, but we can, is the point. That's the point.
Sean, let's think about these 189 countries as a calling list, okay? So you've got the phone numbers of the heads of states of 189 countries, all of which have signed on to an agreement that basically says that you will prohibit the production and use of chemical weapons. So
if somebody were to use the weapons, correct?
Correct.
That we would do something about it if necessary.
Right.
So
what's the range of things that you can do? You can do nothing. You can go in unilaterally, or one thing you could do is start with this list. Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you quickly this. If let's just say Egypt used it on Israel, or Saudi Arabia
mm-hmm.
used it on Israel. Are we saying that Israel cannot go it alone? Are we saying that the United States cannot go it alone?
I think that all of these things have the assumption that if you are attacked, you can respond. What the question is, can you respond if someone else is attacked? That's a whole different question.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But now let's go back to Kosovo. It was within Kosovo, okay? Did we or did we not go and react to that? And can I ask you, it being a progressive, was it right or wrong in regards to Kosovo?
The answers, I believe, are we did take action. I believe that President Clinton did it without authorization from Congress. I believe that it was effective, and in retrospect, it was viewed as the right thing to do.
Right, and now Obama is, in essence, trying to do as like all these, oh, he's got to do it the constitutional way, he's got to do it the right way in being a constitutionalist president, and he seems to be doing the steps that he needs to do. Maybe he shouldn't, as many other presidents since Truman to other presidents today before him have went and gone about and taking action as we've been allowing to do police actions.
Right.
Well, we have done it in the past, but, you know, we were one of the prime forces towards creating a community of international law. And if what we want to do is set up a situation where international law applies to other people, but if we don't like what anybody has done anywhere, we reserve the right to bomb them. That seems to me not to work. Well, that seems to me not to work in establishing the idea of international. Just let me finish the sentence, and then I want to hear what you have to say, okay?
Sure.
I just don't think that works towards establishing the idea of there being an international law. Go ahead.
But the United States also dropped Agent Orange.
I know.
Perfect.
I know. Another reason why.
I think why. It's difficult for the United States to take the moral upper ground in all of this because of the breaches there have been in the past. And I think that we need to kind of clean up our act. This may be an opportunity to do that, to clean up the act in a couple of senses. Number one, presidents have taken military action without congressional approval. Obama is taking a step back, saying maybe we're going to set the precedence of getting congressional approval here. That may be a good thing. Could we do it unilaterally? Is there precedence for it? Yes. However, I believe that this is an extraordinary opportunity to exercise the mechanism of international law here. And the way I see doing it is could be Obama has the phone numbers of the heads of state of 189 countries that have signed this agreement. He can call them up or contact them some way or send them a letter just saying, this is an egregious use of chemical weapons. This is a test for the treaty that we agreed to. Here's a range of possible solutions. I'd like your ideas. I'd like your opinions on these possible solutions. But if we can hold hands here, and not all 189, but maybe we'll get a majority of them or just an overwhelming number of them to move forward and take some step, first diplomatically, and then maybe beyond that, that would be an important thing. Sean, thank you for calling. I've got some other people here we want to move on to. Sally, do you want to say something before we take another caller?
No, that's okay.
Here?
Go ahead.
Okay. Caller from area code 646. You're on the air with Coffee Party here. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what's on your mind.
Hello.
Area code 646. You're on the air. Okay.
Is their mic open?
Is your mic open? We do not hear you. All right. I'm going to mute you for a bit. Sorry, we were not able to hear from you. I know you're on hold for a while there, so I apologize for that. But I think we the Coffee Party, need to think about this in as nuanced a way as can be effective. And the idea of here is a clear breach of the Chemical Weapons Convention signed by or with 189 parties. What are these parties doing? Do they all have to agree? No. Does it have to be through the United Nations? Not necessarily. Can they all take a stand? I think that they can. Is it a vote for or against military action? Not necessarily. I think there's a range of options. If the heads of states of all these countries simply signed a letter that said, this is the evidence, we're clear this is what happened, this is a clear violation, and we'd like the following things to happen, that would be an important point here. I'm going to go back. Area code 616. You're on the air with Coffee Party Radio. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what's on your mind. Still not there.
Is it 616 or 646?
It's 646.
646, are you there? No? Okay.
No. All right. Sorry about that. Okay. Sally, you were going to say something.
Well, I was just going to say that I think under the Chemical Weapons Treaty, we also agreed to destroy stockpiles that we held
correct.
Of chemical weapons, which
that's
we, which I don't believe we have done. So, I mean, would somebody else in that group be justified in bombing us? That's an interesting question.
Yeah, the drawdown of the existing chemical destructions, there's a timeline for destruction, and it basically says that 1% should be reduced by April 2000, 20% by 2002, 45% by 2004, and as Sally points out, we're late because it was all supposed to be gone by April 2007. So what's happening? The truth is that by May of 2012, which is the latest information I have, more than 50,000 tons of declared chemical weapons has been destroyed.
Do we know what percentage that is?
It's 71% of declared chemical weapons of Category 1 have been destroyed, as well as all Category 3 declared chemicals. Now, I'm not clear on my categories of chemicals here.
Do you know
but,
if that's worldwide or in the United States?
That is worldwide, and that is based on declared stockpiles and so on, okay? And
that's
they give,
great. I didn't realize we had done that much had been done.
Right. Now, for the United States, they show that we had a declared stockpile of 31,000 tons, and the organization has verified that 90% of that has been destroyed. And we had a deadline for April 2012. There's a note here. It says that we intend to have it done by 2023. So that's another 10 years from now we intend to have it done. Now, why doesn't this happen more quickly? A couple things. I think it's not easy to do. It's dangerous work, and it just may not be clear. I mean, you don't put a canister of sarin out in the trash to get rid of it. You've got to do something chemically to alter it, and it's dangerous, tedious, expensive work. So that is true. Why would we have signed on and been 10 years behind this? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of speculation for that. But
well, that's
but
better
progress
than
that's
I thought we
thing.
Had made. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
Is Sean still around? If we don't, if our other caller isn't coming through, maybe we should bring Sean back in.
Okay. Let's see. So we're going to try area code 646. If you're there, you're on the air with Coffee Party Radio, but I do not hear you. And Sean is there. Sean.
Oh, it's John, by the way. Sorry about that.
John.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's John. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Yeah. No problem.
Okay. So we have John back from area code 908, and we welcome you back to the conversation here. What do you think about engaging these signatories to the convention, 189 people, who all thought this was a bad thing to do or a good thing to do, and just having them sound off, having them join together in some kind of at least a resolution, if not an action plan for this. Is that a path? Could that work?
Well, let me say this. My father was a B-52 Navigator bombardier in Vietnam. And, you know, I'm not going to say what he did was right or wrong, of course, but it was what was being done then, okay? And I don't know exactly if he dropped some of the other stuff, maybe including Agent Orange.
Right.
I know, of course, I know he dropped bombs, you bet.
And he may not know that, by the way, but okay.
And he may not know of that. That's correct, because
right.
they didn't tell them, okay? But they were out to do what they were told to do. And,
right.
You know, but let me say this. You know, it has to do with, okay, you know, now we signed on to this thing and get rid of our own stockpiles and all that. And, of course, you know, I don't take it to extreme progressive whatever desires of, like, get rid of all our nuclear weapons and get rid of all our chemical weapons either, because of the fact that until other countries do it, you know, we're not going to do it, of course. You know, until it's dwindled down to other countries zero with chemical weapons, we'll be pretty much the last one. And why? Because we always take a defensive posture, too. You know, if some other countries have it, you know, we want to make sure we have it, too. And regardless, you know, if with nuclear weapons, we're never going to get rid of them. You know, and if anybody has the true progressive notion that we're going to get rid of nuclear weapons, that's crazy talk. Because, I mean, the whole thing with which we never had a nuclear war, okay, because there is such a thing as the understanding of how to make nuclear weapons now. The only reason we never had a nuclear war was because of what was called mutual assured destruction.
Right.
I mean, the Russians knew it and we knew it. And basically, you know, they knew how well prepared we were for it, okay?
John, I have a movie recommendation for you. I'm going to recommend the movie 13 Days. It's actually one of my favorite movies. It's a docudrama. It's totally engaging. I'm just on the edge of my seat. I've seen it many, many times. And it's a docudrama covering the 13 days that occurred in October 1962, when we first got intelligence that the Cubans were readying basically nuclear missiles to be launched at the United States. And the idea of mutual assured deterrence, I think, is called into question by that.
Well, I know, that day it was very much so. I mean, I know I never saw the movie, but I know what occurred on that day as far as the history. Our carrier, I forget it was the America or something out there, and it dropped that was out there, and then they were dropping depth charges off the planes from the planes there, and then I think some of the destroyers or something like that from the subs that were down below. The Russians were ready to launch something. The one captain in the boat, you know, and he was going to do it without approval from Russia. So we came damn close.
It's a showdown between the strategy of John Kennedy and whoever was running Russia at the time, and I say that because it's actually a little bit ambiguous who was calling the shots at the time. But it shows the range of options that Kennedy went through, what he did to get the most important information that he needed, who he trusted and who he did not trust on his own staff, the way he was able to establish communications, several communications paths to Russia, because it seems that there was not a unified front there, and some very, very creative responses. Here, it's a fabulous movie. It probably saved our lives.
It shows
the range of options that you have.
To bring it though, I wonder what is the rush for us to act without any authorization from anybody or anything.
Right. And on that, in fact, I actually believe that between the president's speech last Saturday and the time that Congress makes a vote, that Assad would be crazy to do anything blatantly belligerent in that time, because that would kind of settle the vote.
Undercut him everywhere.
We may have created kind of a ceasefire zone now between now and when this is decided, and if that's the case, that's a very good outcome. I don't know if that was part of the strategy, but that's at least an important side effect for this.
Can I say about what's the rush?
Sure.
I'll tell you what's the rush. Cause, I mean, you know, I know military stuff very well, besides from stuff in regards to my father. You know, most people here in the country think that we're going after the weapons. We're not. We're going after a guidance delivery. You know, that's what we're going after right now. So is there a need for Rush? Yeah, because he could hide, you know, guidance delivery systems. You know, that's the need to Rush. So, I mean, really, accordingly, this is the only talk that we're talking about now is causing a quick strike. And you know, if you don't strike fast, then you lose that ground, you know.
Well,
so,
yeah, but do you think that there will be no response?
Yeah, I guess the scary response that everybody has, for which Israel doesn't seem to be that scared about, because they're all for this, that the United States do this. But here is the response that they're talking about, that yeah, they go launch it to certain ones at Israel. Now, of course, in a political thing, you know, yeah, this heightens everything, sure. Oh, yeah.
Well,
there are a
number of other possible responses. There's American embassies, there's some of which are very close. So it could widen appreciably if we act. And then there we are stuck again.
But what if we don't act?
Well, if we don't act, they're having a civil war, and they've been having a civil war, and I don't know whether not bombing them is the same as not acting, because if you believe that international law has a place in the world, then there are, you know, to put it into motion to bring Assad to criminal justice, you know, as a war criminal, is one way to go.
I'm just not sure that
bombing people is the...
How are you going to do that, though?
Well, how are you going to do that? But
right. If
you're going to bomb people, I'm not sure that that's the way
progress. We're not talking about bombing people at all. Like I told you,
we may not be talking about it, but I have not seen many instances in history where bombing was done without people getting killed.
There have been cases, sure there have.
Where?
But this is what we're talking. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about taking out his guidance delivery systems, and this is the thing which most Americans always get confused about. War, war, war. You hear the words war and progressives, and everybody goes crazy about it. But they're not listening to what is really being said. And yes, can it develop into something more? Sure, anything could. But
I think they're listening to what is being said. They're just
not sure that what's being said
is what's going to happen, because in many, 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 many cases in the past, what was being said doesn't really have much relation to what actually happened.
Yeah, but you say that people are going to get killed too, and this is, you know, part of it, right, what they're talking about now is taking out guidance systems first. That's it.
That may be what they're talking about, but I find it difficult to believe that that is what will happen, because that is not what has happened in the past, you know?
Yeah, but this is Obama talking, and do you not believe
him? Well, do I not believe him? I don't know whether I believe him or not. He has been reluctant to bring forth any proof, which I don't understand, because that would help his case tremendously.
What do you mean?
I don't know why.
The international community already brought the proof.
What proof?
Even though they're saying, hold up. Well, no, hold on. I just heard it today, and before I heard it before, and then I heard what they said today. They brought it up that, yes.
Who's they?
The U.N.
Now,
the U.N.
The U.N.
Brought it up that he not the rebels, used the weapon.
He, Assad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was confirmed earlier this week. Now, regardless,
what's the investigation team in for? And why does Ban Ki-moon say we need to wait for their report?
They did confirm it, the UN, prior. Okay, of course we know that it was used, correct?
We also haven't had the report. I mean, do we know it was? Yeah, we think it was used, but, you know, John Kerry told me it was used. A lot of people have told me it was used, but the proof that
the international community has said that it has been used. Now, you know, do you want to do mass further investigations, that's one thing. But they did say it was used. And accordingly, their quick say delivery on it is that it was Hassad and not rebels.
I have not seen that proof. Have you seen the proof, or have you just had assurances that somebody saw the proof?
This is what has been
just on
said.
That point. What I believe is true is that there's broad consensus that, number one, a chemical attack occurred. I don't know that anyone disputes that a chemical attack occurred. The evidence, so we can consider that as all but certain. Who did it? It's nearly certain that it was Assad's regime, and the evidence we hear from that, and again, yes, we do get it from John Kerry, but I trust him more than some other people we've heard from years ago, is that if you look
so
at the locations
I.
that
yes.
were attacked, if you look at the delivery mechanisms that were used, and in fact, there may be direct American intelligence that saw the rockets and those kinds of things. So I believe that
a chemical
attack occurred, and it was almost certainly from him, and I think that's broadly understood. So I don't think that's really a primary point of contention here, although it's worth continuing to investigate with that. It's worth seeing what the United Nations has found out and so on. John, I'm going to move on because we do have some other callers here. I appreciate your call, and I'm going to go here to area code 412. You're on the Coffee Party Radio with Lee Beaumont as your host. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what is on your mind.
Hello, Lee. This is Greg in Pittsburgh. I actually just have a question. I haven't seen any news reports throughout any of this that would lead me to believe that anyone is proposing some sort of a set of peace talks. Do you know if that's occurred anywhere by anyone?
It's been proposed by many people, but I don't know that it's been proposed officially by any state, okay? And, in fact, this letter from the Quaker people, I mean, that's really what they want to get come down to. So I have not heard of it being proposed by any state, or at least any prominent state, that happen.
That would seem to me to be a legitimate alternative course of action. I just don't understand why that's not something that's at least being discussed by us in our government, by the British, by the French, by the Russians. Nobody seems to be saying, look, the idea of a military intervention will most assuredly do only one thing, and that is escalate the issue. It won't cause Assad to stop doing anything. With all due respect to my Democratic brother, John, in New Jersey, the fantasy that we live in an age when our military can so precisely target delivery systems and that Assad doesn't already have them secured in bunkers that don't require significant munitions to break into and to destroy. And to your point earlier, Lee, that chemical weapons are not destroyed by explosions. They are destroyed under very controlled, extremely high-temperature conditions. The idea of us striking them with missiles and bombs is, candidly, it's like 18th century thinking. It's ridiculous. We've been down this path. We've seen this movie so often, and especially over the last, 40 or 50 years. This is us going in there with a military strike will most assuredly make things only worse, not better for anyone.
You raise a really interesting point. Because if what we're doing is playing good cop, bad cop, we need the good cop to come forward with the peace talk proposals. You know,
right.
Where is our good cop?
No one's talking about that. And I
that would be a first step. I talked about, you know, the chemical weapons convention with all the signatories to it. A first step would be that those signatories get together and just say, we want peace talks, and you can have it in any one of our countries, and we'll be happy to broker it, and so on and so forth. And that would begin to put in important pressure.
I'd like to make one last point, and again, just in point of clarification. The ABC News website, and I posted this link in the chat room, As of today, is still urging the U.S. to await U.N. report on Syria. I've tried to scan read while we've been on the line. The jury is not completely in on who used the chemical weapons. I'm pretty sure we all agree the most likely candidate in all of this is going to be Assad. But this doesn't change the calculus in my mind as to whether or not we ought to be pursuing a non-military strategy with trying to help the Syrians to bring an end to the civil war and then figure out how we can help them to find a path towards a peaceful government if all we're going to do is continue to kill people. And to your point earlier, and I'm sorry, I don't remember, Lee, your co-host's name, but the point
is
well
made.
I'm sorry, what is it?
Hi, I'm Sally.
Hi, Sally. Sorry about that, Sally.
That's okay.
Sally, your point is excellent and needs to be remembered by, again, everyone who believes the mythology of video game generation military strikes. People will die. And those people, whether they're on your side or the other side, have families, relatives, and friends who are going to remember that. That's why we're having such a hard time today in the Muslim world, because we had the whole world behind us on September 11th. We squandered that terribly. And now we're continuing down that same bad policy strategy with the same part of the world. We cannot get away from this notion that we are considered to be, I think by many people, aggressors and imperialists. Until we start to pull back a little bit on that, until we start to really demonstrate to the rest of the world that we actually believe in and live by our morals and our ethics, we are going to continue to see these kinds of issues come up across the planet, and we're not going to be helping them. We're only going to be making them worse. That's really all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Greg. We're going to move on here to some other callers, but Greg is basically saying let's start with some peace talks. And let's not forget that violence begets violence, and that while you might want to blow up a bunker, there might be someone nearby that gets blown up. So these are good things, but there are other points of view. Sally, did you want to say something before we take another caller?
I just wanted to say that it brings up the question of why we are still pursuing the same basic philosophy, even though administrations have changed. And supposedly, we all voted for a change in outlook. So what's driving the push towards continuing a military, the viewpoint that a military solution is the only kind of answer there is? Does the military, whoever's building the bombs, have that much power, or where is that coming from?
Yeah, I do not know this. We know our president won the Nobel Peace Prize. We know he voted against the war in Iraq. We know he has campaigned vigorously on that point. We know he has torn down the wars in Iraq and in Afghanistan. So I have to believe in his heart. He views military use as the last resort. But we also know that he's pragmatic. We know that he has used drones rather aggressively, and he's a pragmatic person, and that he gets intelligent briefings every day that we never see. And I think the world just may be scarier than we all know that it is. That's probably what drives it. Is there a military thread... You know, is the military in charge saying they'll, you know, do it or there's a coup? I doubt it that far, but I think that he gets shown things that are scary.
Well, I just want to say that he also, I mean, he gets intelligence briefings, but he also, once he acceded to power, was privy to a lot of information about who holds what influence, which includes money,
right,
which includes all sorts of things that we also don't
right.
know about. And that may be bearing on it just as much as the intelligence. Because, you know, I've heard analyses of this situation that it's about pipelines and oil and whose pipeline has prominence and where a pipeline would go. you know, not just oil but natural gas. So,
yeah.
You know, if it's about fossil fuel energy, that's a whole different set of interests.
Bad. Yeah. I hope that's not true, but we never know. Let's take a caller here. Let's go to area code 620. You're on the Coffee Party Radio with Lee Beaumont and Sally Swisher. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what is on your mind, please. Area code 620.
Okay, this is Jack Golding. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I get the impression here that the one that's behind, I heard this, one that's behind this gassing of the civilians is a sad brother. That's what I've heard. So you take it, and I got mixed feelings about this whole matter. I have one feeling that you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. That pinprick, that's what they're saying. It's not going to do a goddamn thing. Single be a darn thing to Syria. I think maybe the slow motion is there. We got to do something. The herd is something that get the Syrian government to negotiate with the rebels, but they got another thing that Assad is taken out of power, he might get worse. He might get Al Qaeda. You got a couple of pieces of the rebels that are really Islamic extremists.
Trade
and known,
and known problem from an unknown problem.
Well, yeah, it's going to get worse. Maybe worse solution than what Assad keeping Assad in power is. So I don't know what you get. You're from a lock to a hard place, and I say I have a friend that say, "Well, it's a waste. It's a waste, actually, to even go there."
Well,
Jack, thank you for that. With respect to Assad's brother, I did hear a report that Assad's brother is head of the military and may actually have done this, but I haven't looked into it, so we need to fact check me on that. But the other point I think Jack brings out is that we may be trading a known problem for an unknown problem. Who are the rebels? What happens when you get a power vacuum in the country? What's the role of Al-Qaeda in this? What's the role of Iran in all this? And it just isn't really clear. Sally, did you want to say something?
Why do we feel that it is our individual problem to solve? Because there are a lot of problems in the world and a lot of terrible things, and the Syria situation is definitely a rock and a hard place. But I don't understand why we feel that we are the people who have to solve it, A, and B, that we have to solve it with military action.
Right. Let's go on here. We have quite a few callers today. And area code 646, you've been on hold for some time here. You're on Coffee Party Radio with Lee Beaumont and Sally Swisher. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what is on your mind. Area code 646. All right. Still not there. So we're going to go on to...
646 is not listening.
That's right. We're going to go on to area code 908, exchange 288. Is that
John
again?
Yeah.
John again. Okay, thank you, John. We're going to go back. I'm not that good at this. Here we have a veteran here. Area code... Codename Piston Pilot.
You have the one angry Jew.
Okay. Tell us your name.
Did I hear you, the one angry Jew, did I hear you make an excuse for Obama? What's this pragmatic stuff?
Pragmatic?
What does that mean? What do you mean when you say that? He's pragmatic. He's a he's a warmonger. He's a warmonger with a peace prize. Why don't you give me a humanitarian award and I'll become an abortionist? And I'll carry the award around with me while I do abortions. I'll put it up on the wall.
Wait a second. Let's not get into abortion. Syria is tough enough, okay?
Well, all right. You know,
let me explain
my mind. Well, no, let me explain to you. Why, for one thing, stop making excuses for Obama. He's acting lawlessly. For one, he has no support of the country. He's got, what, 8% of the people say yes? And I'm guessing they all work in the government. Because who else is for it? Are you for it? You want to go bomb Syria? Neither of you. And has anybody called and said, yeah, let's go bomb Syria? And the gentleman who called and said he heard that it was Assad's brother. First of all, the factions that are in there fighting against Assad, I'm going to just take Assad's side for the moment. It's a sovereign country. Why does Assad have to negotiate with terrorists? Would you like to negotiate with terrorists here? And please, let's not say that 9/11 was something or other, because we did 9/11. We did it to ourselves. We blew those buildings up.
Ooh.
We killed those people. So not a bunch of Saudis, and let's not forget that they were nothing more than patsies. Because as you well know, when you're going to blow up, but when you're going to hijack an airplane at 8 o'clock in the morning, you would necessarily drive past Boston, where you're going to hijack, and you sleep in Maine to catch a commuter flight, which you know is going to be on time, in the morning so that you can get to Boston to hijack an airplane. Right.
Wait a second. Can I just say, this is a really big subject, and I have some sympathy with what you're talking about, but...
Sure, I'm right. Sympathy should lie with truth.
Fun to discuss with you because, boy, you believe in what you believe, don't you?
You got that right.
Look,
I do.
Look,
I am a pilot.
I just want to say, let's go back. You're a pilot. Okay, that's good. But, you know, if we want to talk about who did 9/11, that's a whole nother subject. Can't we stay closer on Syria?
Yes, we can. But 9/11 was mentioned by the gentleman who said something about we dropped the ball or we allowed something or other.
I think what was said was that we had a lot of sympathy at that time.
Oh, the American people didn't drop the ball on 9/11. 9/11 was done to us by our government. And we won't investigate it, so we won't look into it. Now, Syria, you want to have another, 10 years now later that we went and bombed Iraq? You want to have another Iraq? You think that's a great idea? I don't think it's a good idea. For one thing, our president has ties to terrorism. Let me substantiate that statement, but I'll say it again. Barack Obama has intimate ties to terrorism. How do I say that? Well, go to Shubat.com and look at Waleed Shubat's translation of what the Egyptian Supreme Court justice said, pointing her finger at America because the Egyptians are tired of us messing around with their country. Now that we're finished ruining Egypt, we're going to go and ruin Syria and the rest of the Middle East? Great idea. But Barack Obama, I can show pictures of his brother Malik, his older brother, who is a Kenyan, who has been at the White House, lived in America for 14 years. I can show you pictures of him in the White House. I can show you pictures of him with the big shots of the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda. The Supreme Court Justice of Egypt pointed her finger and said, he is the money man for the Muslim Brotherhood. He is the half-brother of Obama. He is intimately involved with Obama. In fact, Lois Lerner, you know that name, don't you?
I do, but I don't know why. Who's Lois Lerner?
Lois Lerner is that IRS lady, the one that said,
right. Yeah. I know who she is now.
Lois Lerner signed off maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, and she signed off retroactively on Malik Obama's nonprofit. That's right.
Wait a second. We're ranging all over the place. Can I just summarize for a minute?
I'm
it sounds. Wait. It sounds. Wait.
Terrorist.
wait, it sounds as if you're saying that Obama wants to attack Syria because he is allied with al-Qaeda and it will help
exactly
him.
Exactly what I'm saying. Muslim Brotherhood and al-Qaeda.
Well,
our president is a terrorist. Now, you don't have to believe me.
I think that's – I don't even want to get into that argument.
Why not?
But because –
the man who has his finger on the nuclear button and who says, I'm going to send troops and I'm going to send missiles into a country has terrorist ties. Why is that not relevant?
Well, what I really think is more relevant here is that it is not our decision to either support either to keep Assad in power or to bring.
That's right. It's none of our business.
Right.
And
that's where I think we need to be focused because
when Putin and China says, "Hey, we don't have any evidence," and how come we haven't presented our evidence to Putin? How come we haven't?
This is what I was asking before.
How come? Why haven't we sent our evidence, our so-called evidence? First of all, Putin comes up with a 100-page report and says, it wasn't Assad, it was factions of the whatever. And, oh, my God, are you telling me that somebody's going to do a false flag and blame it on somebody else like 9/11? Oh, no, that would never happen.
Like the
Gulf of Tonkin and all the other stuff? You mean that could happen? Oh,
yeah.
No, never. But I'm going to come back to our president, who I believe has terrorist ties. Well, I believe that his thoughts and sympathies go with the Muslim Brotherhood. Why did he put Morsi into Egypt? Why did he coerce the Egyptians?
I don't think he put Morsi into Egypt.
Yes, he did. He made
it. No, he didn't.
We control these things. If you don't think that we control everything that goes around the world, you need to read up. You really do. We do control everything that goes around the world.
If we control everything that goes around the world, I don't think it's Obama. I think it's probably the head of Goldman Sachs.
Well, I agree with you. Well, okay, the head of Goldman Sachs. They're a bunch of scumbag bankers who got bailed out. Nobody else did, but everybody else gets thrown out of their homes. But
right.
They get to eat fine dining in New York City. May they choke on their food and die. May they all get cancer and die. Now,
you've given us a lot to think about here.
Ignoring, you know, you're damn right I am. Because if I'm not, I told you my name was One Angry Jew. And I live up to my name in every way, shape, and form. I am One Angry Jew. Look at what's going on here. Now, I just told you that our president has ties to a half-brother who is intimately involved with the Muslim Brotherhood. He goes to the big shot meetings. It's like he's a cabinet member of the Muslim Brotherhood. How are you going to ignore that? How can
I didn't see you prove that.
Forward? Well, go to Shubat.com. It was Savage interviewed him as well. It was on a local show near me with Dick Morris. Dick Morris interviewed Jerome Corsi.
Dick Morris, great source.
Dick Morris. Yeah, remember Dick Morris who put?
Yeah, I remember Dick Morris. Believe me.
Yeah. Well, I don't particularly like Dick Morris as a human being. I think he's a slimeball for what he's done. However, he gets very interesting information, and he gets very interesting guests. So I listen. I don't just turn my listen. When I go to the gym, I got a guy that walks in. If I have Fox News on, he can't be in the room when I'm working out because I got Fox News on. Oh, no, I can't watch Fox News. I like to watch MSNBC for the comical
One, thank you very much. We're going to move on. We do have some other callers here, and you've given a point of view, and we'll talk to it. So thank you very much. On that, I just want to mention a couple things that were made. One, he asked me first, why do I describe Obama as pragmatic? Basically, to contrast Obama with Jimmy Carter. I think Jimmy Carter was had wonderful... and a wonderfully idealistic outlook of what the world could be, what a president could be, but because he failed to be pragmatic, that is, basically take the steps you would need to advance your ideas through some compromise with the other party, with other people in power, including moneyed power and so on. I think that he was drummed out. Obama threads the needle, I think, a little more carefully there, and it causes him to do things that I think are against his ideology, but that he needs to do to move forward. With respect to did 9/11, did the United States government cause the 9/11 collapse? We talked about that actually on the Middle Ground about 4 weeks ago. I put a link up on the comments back then to a very good NOVA program that investigated this in some depth to explain how it happens. The topic of that show was called Knowing How You Know, which is basically how we are able, how a person is able to filter through all the information on the Internet. And our caller one there told us about one website. There are billions of websites with all sorts of information. It's up to each of us to decide what we're going to believe and what we're not going to believe. I'm not dismissing the theories or the beliefs or the viewpoints that he's bringing forward. I'm just saying that each of us has to have some way of deciding for ourselves what we believe and what we don't believe. And I did a whole show on that on the Middle Ground several weeks ago. Let's move on. Those viewpoints are out there. They certainly have enough validity to gain their adherence, and we need to think through those. Sally, did you want to say more before we take another caller here?
Go ahead. Take a call.
Okay. Let's go to area code 917, and you're on the Coffee Party Radio with Lee Beaumont and Sally Swisher. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what is on your mind. Area code 917. Area code 917. No. Okay. Maybe we'll come back to that. We do have here. Let's move on. Let's go on to the second question that came from our Quaker friends here, because it brings up another point that I think is worth talking about. The second question, and again, I'm reading from something sent to me by the Peace Alliance, that abstracts information from the Friends Committee on National Legislation, which is a Quaker lobby in the public interest. And they suggest this question. Now that Iran's President Hassan Rouhani has condemned the use of chemical weapons in Syria and reportedly initiated a call with Russia to discuss both governments' opposition to the use of chemical weapons, has the Obama administration considered engaging Iran's president by asking that the Iranian government put pressure on the Assad regime to refrain from future chemical weapons attacks? So this is a very interesting idea here. There is a newly elected president of Iran. He seems somewhat more moderate than Ahmadinejad. In fact, I understand that on Friday he tweeted greetings to the Jewish community on their on the new year. So that's kind of a new thing. Is it in Iranians' interest to settle the conflict in Syria, to end the use of chemical weapons? Is there some possible coalition, perhaps just coalition is too strong a word, but maybe some opportunity for movement in engaging or at least talking to Iran, having a first meeting, maybe a summit talks between our president and their new president on talking about this topic, and maybe Russia, and maybe get an opening there. Any thoughts on that, Sally? Would it be a good idea or a bad idea for President Obama to meet with new Iranian president and discuss this topic?
I don't know. I mean, you know, a face-to-face meeting is a complicated diplomatic step, and I don't know if that is the right thing to do. However, what I mentioned before about Putin saying that he might be willing to change to be for action against Assad if the UN is allowed to do its work seems to me to be kind of a big thing, you know?
Yeah.
That, and it seems that we should be jumping on that idea with both feet.
I agree.
Because that shows that's a public statement, and making a public statement like that shows quite a bit of willingness to change, I would think.
So that would be something, a coalition between the United States, Russia, and Iran. That's something there. And to use that to maybe settle a civil war in Syria or to end the use of chemical weapons, that would be a new world order. That would be a wonderful.
Hey, I just want to interject here. I just got a text that from a friend who said that that another friend was on the line, which was probably the 917 number and possibly the 646 number as well. Okay. But they were on the line, and they, and we couldn't hear them.
All right.
So
well,
I don't
know
what happened.
All right. I'm going to answer. I'm going to go to caller now, 917. You are on the air now with the Coffee Party Radio. Area code 917. Can you hear
hello?
Us? And what do you have to say? Yes. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, because I was on before and you couldn't.
All right,
so,
what is your name?
My name is Chuck Slatkin. I'm from New York City. I'm also a member of the Big Apple Coffee Party along with Sally.
Okay.
And,
hi, Chuck.
Hi, and I appreciate the passion of everybody. I just wish we could stay a little more focused on the issue of whether there should be a military strike against Syria and what we can do as citizens. I know people have strong opinions. I don't know how many of them have called their representatives in the House and Senate, how many have signed on to petitions saying no. I mean, we can still talk and get all exorcised, but it's a good to take that action because from the people I've talked to, left, right, and center, you know, I haven't found anybody who's in favor of a military strike except people who work for elected officials. And as far as the you, Lee, I disagree with you on two counts. I have no idea what's in Barack Obama's heart. And secondly, I don't trust the John Kerry any more than his predecessors and people in other administrations because I've already seen him lie this time on a few things that I just happen to know about were lies. So I think that the American people have to rise up for what they see as right. I don't see what a limited strike would do except increase the chances for much more military intervention. If there's a response, you know, a U.S. ship is fired upon, we'll be back in having a full-scale war, spending $500 million a week on another military intervention that to me is not justified. Because to me, is white phosphorus a chemical weapon? If it is, we stood by when Israel used it against the Palestinians. We've seen other chemical weapons used. We've used Agent Orange, atomic weapons. I mean, war is not the answer. It's not the solution. And I really have to go, so I just have to say that. But to me, war is a lot like cancer. There's no good cancer.
Well,
thank you very much, Chuck.
Gotta run.
Thank you very much. So just to summarize, the topic is war in Syria. We should focus on that. Chuck says take action. We all have our representatives. Get in touch with them and tell us our feelings here. So I think that's good advice. Reiterate what I said at the top of the show, I try to look beyond a false dichotomy. And I believe that framing this as either we go to war or we don't may be limiting our choices here. So what I wanted to do today was get some dialogue. Is there another alternative other than just, you know, do nothing or go to war? And that's what I tried to bring out here. But I, with Chuck, thanks for reminding me that, you know, I think, therefore, I vote. Put your thoughts into writing, send them to your congressman, your senator, your other representatives. Go visit their offices, go to their town meetings, and make your voices heard because this is
call
an important
them.
Issue. Call them.
Call them.
Yes.
Don't forget to call them.
And I've heard a couple things. Well, I've heard that if a congressman receives 10 letters, not form letters, but 10 individually written letters on one issue, they take up that issue. I've heard that if a group of maybe 3 or 4 people together ask for an appointment to go see the congressman, that they do their best to accommodate a group of that size. If you come in with well-thought-out positions and so on, it can be influential. So, yes, we should do more than talk to each other. We should let our congressmen know our views. And you can say, I'm dead set against the war, and that's it. Or you can say, I'm dead set in the war. Why don't we have peace talks? Why don't we look at the Chemical Weapons Convention? Why don't we do these other things? All that is good. So thank you, Chuck, for your patience and your persistence and bringing us that in. Sally, did you want to add to that?
No, that's fine. Maybe we should try 646 again.
646, I think, has given up on us.
Oh, my.
So that's a shame.
Are there more points in the from the Quakers?
There are. And point three seems the same as point two, so I'm going to go to point four. Point four says, from the Quakers, the Obama administration has asserted that there is no military solution to the crisis in Syria, only a political one. So what is ours, and more importantly, what is the international community's political solution for Syria? As the International Crisis Group pointed out in their recent report on Syria, quote, the principal question regarding a possible military strike is whether diplomatic efforts to resolve the conflict can be re-energized in its aftermath. The crisis group, and I'm not familiar with the crisis group, but the crisis group, one of few international organizations with a long-standing presence on the ground in Syria, is unequivocal that such efforts should not be re-energized in the wake of a U.S. attack. How will you respond to these? So basically what they're saying is Obama admits that there is no military solution, and I think that that's fairly clear, only a political one. But they go on to say that once you start firing, it probably winds down diplomatic efforts rather than winding them up. And what's the possibility for that? So that's something to keep in mind. Also, this crisis group, I'm not sure who they are, but if that's a perhaps forward-thinking organization or diplomatic organization or humanitarian organization on the ground in Syria, is there some way to engage them and to exert their influence and so on? If you're going to write your congressman, I encourage you to include some of these questions or advocating some of these actions that we be taken as an alternative to a strike, or even if you're in favor of a strike, as a steps to be taken before going in. You know, you can put together a fairly simple go-to-war checklist, and one of the items is, have we exhausted diplomacy? Another one is, what happens after we start? What happens after the first bombs fall? What is our conditions for ending the war? Would we ever walk away? And I think those are fairly clear lessons that we should have learned from various earlier conflicts. And until we have the answers to that, it's premature to go in.
I just wanted to repeat something that Chuck brought up, which I thought was a really good point. So what happens if in the aftermath of us attacking Syria, Syria attacks a U.S. ship? Then we've been attacked. We're at war. In a virtually unlimited kind of sense, you know. Once we've been attacked, then it would be easy to whip the United States populace into further engagement,
right.
Or much easier than it is now in the absence of us having been attacked. So,
Rachel Maddow started her show out the other night by talking about the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. And depending on your age, you might know a lot about this or you might not, but let me just review it very, very quickly. Shortly after John F. Kennedy was assassinated and President Johnson became president, certainly Johnson had to decide what's going to happen in Vietnam. And it was small at that time. That is, their U.S. engagement was small at that time. But there's an incident called the Gulf of Tonkin, which was reportedly that a U.S. ship was fired on by Vietnamese. And this incident was used as the basis for the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which was a resolution passed overwhelmingly by the House and by the Senate. In fact, I think the statistics are that one senator voted against it. I think two senators voted against it, and I think it was unanimous in the House, which basically authorized the president to go forward with military operations in Vietnam. Two things we know now about this. The first one is that 50,000 people, Americans, are known to have died in Vietnam. Their names are on a granite wall in Washington, D.C., which I happen to have visited a month ago. So 50,000 Americans died. The other thing that's pretty clear is that no such attack took place. That is the story about an American ship being attacked by the North Vietnamese seems to be false. And it's kind of extraordinary, and this may be Sally's point here, that you look for an excuse to rally popular support, congressional support, about, you know, we're going to go get those guys because they attacked us. And it's a it's an effective pretense for going to war. In the case of Gulf of Tonkin, it was false. In the scenario Sally gave us, it could be real but provoked, and it leads to more escalation. So do not forget the Gulf of Tonkin. If it's not something you've studied, it might be worth looking it up and learning a few things about that, what was said, what was done, what it led to, and what we can learn from that.
Do we have other callers at this point?
I'm working on that. I think we have area code 609. So let us go to a caller from area code 609. You're on the air with the Coffee Party Radio, Politics Done Right. I'm Lee Beaumont, and here we're with Sally Swisher. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what is on your mind, please.
Well, yes, my name is Lloyd. I'm calling from Southern Jersey.
Okay.
I was listening when that Jew called in and said about the bomber being, what did he say he was, tied to terrorism or terrorism?
Correct.
Or I don't remember. Why aren't you talking about that? That seems very compelling, and I'm sure it's not difficult to look up if you look on the Internet, but why are you not discussing that? Because why is my life and future being put in the hands of somebody who may have terrorist ties?
Well, let me explain why I'm not talking about it. Basically, I have not done the research and I don't have the background to talk about it, is why I'm not talking about it here. The other reason is my inclination is that it's my prejudice, and I'll call it a prejudice, is that it's doubtful. I believe it's doubtful because
it was helpful or not helpful.
No. Doubt. My own disposition to hearing that I'm unsure. I'm certainly unsure because I haven't researched it, but I tend to doubt it.
Mr. Obama has been predisposed to helping the Muslim Brotherhood. We've noticed this all the time.
I haven't noticed that.
Yes. Did he not have a hand in what happened in Egypt? And look at the mess that he made over there.
I really don't have much proof of his hand in what happened in Egypt myself. I have not seen that.
He absolutely
and you know, this is, here we are again. Here we are again. Do you have proof? I don't think you do.
Morsi.
Yeah, you do? What's your proof?
Proof that he backed Morsi. Now, if you're going to ask me with that old canard, say, well, show me that proof right now because you have gotten me talking about it.
Well, but you don't have proof right now, and neither do
I.
So what are we talking about?
That he has helped Morsi.
I don't see that.
That's not
No, that's not a fact. No, that's not a fact. That's your assertion, and I don't see it. So, you know, we could talk about your... no, I don't think so. I really don't think so.
I voted for Obama, and I too voted for the change, but I am not happy with the change that I've gotten.
Proof that he has been supporting the Muslim Brotherhood is not something that I see.
I've gotten a weakened economy, madam. I've gotten what is my future? My 401k has been almost depleted. It's almost gone.
I agree, but I don't think it has to do with Obama's terrorist ties. Do you?
I told you, if you had paid attention, madam, that you would know that we were behind Morsi, that we were installing Morsi.
What does Morsi have to do with your 401k? That's my problem now.
What does all of this have to do with my 401k? When 13% of the black population by the official vote is not working, madam, the country is not working.
I'm Sally.
Nowhere.
I'm Sally. Don't call me madam. I agree with you. But
that we're going to bomb a country and we don't have the money to take care of the senior citizens, to take care of anybody else?
I agree with you about that. The thing I don't agree with you about is Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood and Obama's ties to them and what it has to do with your 401k.
Well, maybe I should join the old canard with you and tell you to do your homework, Adam, instead of telling me to do mine.
I'm not telling you to do homework. I'm just asking you what they have to do with one another.
Show me proof. Who wanted the proof? Who wanted the definitive proof?
What?
Lloyd, I began by saying...
Who wants the definitive proof? Can I give you the definitive proof? When the conversation, if you want to ask me about economics, I don't have figures in front of me.
Lloyd, I'm trying to go back to address your first question, which
but
is why we weren't talking more.
Do you understand how upset I am about all of this?
I do. I can hear your anger.
Piece by piece, coming apart. And everybody's talking about nonsense. Bomb this country, bomb that country. What kind of people are we that we destroy and kill women and children with bombs?
I agree with you there, boy.
And who will die? Will Assad die when we put million-dollar bombs? No, he won't. Women and children and people who have nothing to do with anything will die.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that.
Thanks for your call.
And they will hate us for it, too.
Thanks for your call. Right, your congressman, let me see if I can address some of the issues that you brought up here. You asked first, why didn't I take up on the point that the one angry Jew had brought about Obama being a terrorist? And the answer is, I just don't have enough background. I wanted to talk about it here intelligently, and that's why I haven't talked about it. I went on to say that my inclination is to doubt it when I hear it, but that can be persuaded with some facts. And again, I did a show on knowing how you know. Which kind of gets to this. Did we back Morsi? I don't really know the facts on that either. I can point out that he was elected through somewhat of a democratic process. You could argue that the elections were not fair. You can argue that imposing a democracy that fast on a nation which was not used to it is difficult. You can point out that one party had a kind of an organized campaign for going in one direction and the others were fragmented. But again, elections were held. He was elected. If you're in favor of democracy, which I know I am, you have to give some credence to that. Was it a fair election? Did we have a hand in it? These are all fair questions. With respect to is military intervention in Syria a global issue worth talking about? I think it is. Is it the only global issue? No, it is not. I can tell you I spend most of my time on some of those things. If you want to get a glimpse of that, you can go to Wikiversity, not Wikipedia, but go to Wikiversity, a sister project. You can look up a course there called Grand Challenges. It's a course I'm developing which kind of lays out these problems because, yes, that's what we need to be talking about. It's unfortunate that majority of the legislation passed by the Congress in the past term had to do with naming post offices as opposed to addressing these issues, but that's what happens.
While they're destroying the Postal Service, might I add.
While they're destroying the Postal Service. One other point that I know, are we supporting Morsi, and that I know rankles people with ties to Israel and the Jewish traditions and so on. What I believe is that previous presidents have been asymmetrical in the support of Israel over Arab interests in the Middle East. I believe that Obama, and he gave a speech we know in Cairo, Egypt, I think early in his presidency, where he talked about a somewhat more moderate strategy, where he was kind of opening his hands to Arab interests. My opinion is that if you have two, and don't read too much into this analogy, but I'll use it anyway. You have two kids and they're fighting with each other. You can't always side with the one. There's some truth in what either one has, and I believe that he feels that the long-term interests of a peace in the Middle East, he has to give more of an ear to Middle East interests. People who are aligned with Israel, and there are many good reasons for doing that, kind of see that as a betrayal and become very, very angry on this. I have a personal friend who actually was born in Jerusalem. He's a brilliant man, and this is an issue that he and I have a lot of trouble talking about. It's a very difficult issue. My opinion is that Obama's trying to give a more balanced view, but others see it other ways. So those are some of the topics. And again, Lloyd, thanks for your call. One Angry Jew, thanks for your call. We are the Coffee Party. We try to work with informed dialogue here. I encourage you to research these things in depth, doing your best to adopt a neutral point of view, look at a lot of information here, and apply your own robust theory of knowledge to decide what it is you believe in and why it is. And I think that will be a good thing. Sally, did you want to add to that?
No, I'm just looking at the page of the Facebook page for the rally in Times Square, but it doesn't include updates that I'm seeing. Wait a minute. So I'm sorry. Wow. I think there are a lot of rallies in other places going on.
Okay.
But I don't. Sherrod Brown. I see. I'm sorry. I thought that Sherrod Brown issued a comment, but I don't. But it wasn't him. It was a comment to him. Go ahead.
All right. So just for background, if you just join us a little bit later on that, today there are a number of rallies taking place. These are called Hands Off Syria Anti-War Actions, planned in a number of cities around this country, including one at New York Times Square at 1 p.m. And again, if you're at one of those rallies, give us a call and press 1. We do have another caller here. Let's go to area code 732. You're on Coffee Party Radio, the Politics Done Right, with Lee Beaumont and Sally Swisher. Please tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what is on your mind. Area code 732.
Yeah, hi, how you doing? I'm going to tell you about this thing, what they're talking about with Malik and all that stuff.
Right.
You know,
can you give
us
your name?
This is John again from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Now,
okay,
this whole thing is all hype. Just like, I'll tell you, I had a conversation with some guy yesterday sitting at a bar, and I actually had to tell him that, you know, the stuff that you're screaming about, it's just all hype. You're just making hype. It's just like the Jewish guy that called in, he says, you know, the I think about or I believe kind of stuff. That's the kind of talk that Rush Limbaugh comes out with. You know, the I believe. It's not factuals. You know, okay, there's a lot of conservative, as I see here about this Malik, you know, there's a lot of conservative things about that he, Malik, is part of an Egyptian terrorist watch list, all that kind of stuff. So that's all on the conservative website, these blogs, okay? And through hype and blogs, you know, you could start to skew to try to make people believe almost anything. Just like opposed to a war or not opposed to this Syrian war. Same kind of thing, you know? You could take the progressive stance or you could take a blue Democrat stance on it, or you could, you know, that kind of thing. But anyhow, this thing with half-brother Malik, okay, yeah, he exists. He does. You know, but, and he was running for president in Kenya. He lost the election. I guess he's running for some other political office. Yeah, Obama's half-brother seeks Kenyan governor's office, but then there was something in effect that he had lost. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is just people screaming and making hype. And you know, there's no sense in entertaining with these people. And then, oh, it's now tied to Obama. Let's not forget that all this stuff and these kind of people and the hype that's coming about right now and all these blogs that are coming about quickly, let's not forget Obamacare is the push for it is strong right now. We are within a month right now So, you know, all the Kenyan talk that you heard about over 3 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, about him, and now he got this Malik thing, and he's a terrorist, so Obama's a terrorist, you know? I mean, it's all, this was all planned. I mean, it's all over the conservative blogs now, only within the past short time.
I think a lot of things are end up being distractions.
Absolutely.
And right now, the question of what we're going to do in Syria is up front and very, very, very imminent. And
right.
I think that it represents a lot of dangers and a lot of costs. And
but you guys say that there's no one except people in the government who are in favor of going to do this strike in Syria. Well, I'll tell you, I am. I'll tell you why. And let me pose the questions again to you. Considering, let's go back to chemical use of weapons that Hitler used on Jews, you know, and he did it in gas chambers and all that. Okay. Do you think we should have went to war? I mean, you're progressive. Do you think we should have
Are we talking about,
World
we're
War
now
II?
Talking about World War II?
Yeah, you think we should have done that?
World War II, as wars go, was pretty much a good one. But, that is really not Syria. That is really not Syria. I don't know about Kosovo, because I think that, although, can I just say, there are a lot of people who feel, wait a second, you got to talk. Although many people agree that what we did turned out well, our role as the enforcer was only strengthened the precedent for us to do that. And I think that particular thing is a very bad idea.
Okay, now what about the next Syria that's occurring in some of the country? The next chemical use of weapon kind of thing. Do you think we should just take no action?
I don't think we should take no action. However, I don't think that we, the United States, should take it upon ourselves to punish whoever does something for something that we, in our own country, have decided we don't like. Because that's a very, very vulnerable stance.
Who are we punishing? We're going after guidance systems, delivery systems. That's what we're talking about.
I understand that's what is claimed, but as many people in this conversation have pointed out, it is unusual that guidance systems or any other technical target is destroyed without also destroying a bunch of collateral lives. And that's one of the problems that people have with drone attacks, that they can kill a bunch of people that have nothing to do with anything.
But how many people just lost their lives by him chemically attacking people? And we know that that's true. There were people that were chemically attacked. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
It's
we know that.
It's not the first
the
use
difficulty,
of chemical
John,
weapons.
Is, yeah. John, and I spoke about this a couple nights ago, again, on the middle ground. I'll recap it here. It's difficult for the United States to take the high moral ground because of our spotty track record. If you look at Rwanda with 400,000 people killed, we did nothing. If you look at the Syrian civil war going on for 2 years with 100,000 killed, we did nothing. If you look at Darfur, we did nothing. So it's difficult for us to take the moral high ground. Now, I proposed a fix for that. And what I believe is that we need to move towards a foreign policy that is rigorously based on the concept of human rights, and that we need to put that in place where we methodically assess the human rights status of countries. I suggest using the United Nations Universal Declaration for Human Rights as a standard for doing that. We offer assistance along with other peace-loving countries to countries that want to improve humanitarian or human rights in their country and so on. And if we put that in place and if we are systematic with that, if we are true to that, then we have earned the moral ground to say this is a gross human rights violation. We need to take action here. But we haven't done our homework on that. We can start now doing the homework, but we can't use our previous human rights record necessarily to justify this strike.
I know what you're saying, but this is about oil. You know that. I mean, we are talking about building a pipeline out to the Mediterranean. This is all about everything that was back in World War II and making sure that our allies and us are able to get oil properly. We know, I mean, yes, and considering, yes, it
so
is.
So is it about women and children, or is it about oil?
It is about women and children doing the right thing to deter somebody else from chemical weapons. But, yes, it is about oil. Of course it is.
Well, exactly. And what bothers me is that using women and children as a reason to attack Assad when what we care about is a pipeline is not really where we should be morally, I don't think.
Yeah, but morally, we're going to go after him, his systems, delivery systems. And if you go after delivery systems, that means at this point and later, he can't deliver them to Israel. See, these are the points that you're missing upon as a true progressive.
No, I don't think I'm missing it. I just don't believe that we will be able to actually succeed in only taking out delivery systems. Because, for example, our drone strikes have been responsible for a lot of civilian death, even though it was supposedly aimed at targets that had nothing to do with it. And that civilian death has been really instrumental in whipping up public opinion against the United States. So I think that, you know, if we're going to talk about we have the responsibility to go in and defend these women and children, well, what about somebody feeling that they have the responsibility to stop us from killing people at weddings with drones? Should we be attacked for that? I think we would feel that was inappropriate.
We use drones for a very valid reason, and I know you take the strong progressive stance that there's no need for drones and this and that, but you don't understand how crazy this world is. That's the problem.
But what I'm trying to say is that there may be a reason for drone strikes. I mean, there is a reason for drone strikes. However, I think that the collateral damage that happens during drone strikes may be more damaging than not doing them.
But see, you say these words like may. That's the thing that disturbs me.
There's no way to know. You cannot experiment. You cannot do controlled experiments with war. You can learn from war. You can take a lot of statistics, but it's very difficult to do this. John, thank you very much. I know you're very passionate about this. You've challenged our views here. And thank you for contributing to the dialogue. Your voice should be heard. John asked, you know, is there anyone else out there in favor of the military strikes?
Can I just interject?
I heard some
here.
Data, which is the calls to congressmen are going like 100-1 or even as much as 800-1 against military action. But it might just be that that's a biased sample. It just might be that the people against it are more organized than those for it. So I don't know that that's necessarily a active strike. Did you want to say more on this, Sally, or should we move on to question 6?
I just wanted to thank John for many things to think about and hope that he feels the same.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what we would try to do here is listen carefully to different points of view. I talked about knowing how you know and researching the facts and looking for the middle ground and dismissing false dichotomies, and let's hope that we can do that.
I'm not sure I always agree with the middle ground, though, Lee, I have to say.
my viewpoint is that my viewpoint defines the middle ground. Otherwise, I would change it, right? How's that
doesn't
for
mean
arrogance?
It's right. I've never
How's
argued with
arrogance?
Anybody who thought they were wrong, though.
Yeah, okay. So question number 6 that the Quaker group proposes here is this, and it's relevant to what we're talking about. By rushing to a unilateral military response and ignoring the political solutions afforded by international law, how can the U.S. credibly ask that Syria respect the same systems of international law? Why hasn't the U.S. government submitted a new resolution to the U.N. Secretary Council, akin to the one produced on Libya, making the case within international law precedents and precepts? So this comes down to, it's not a good idea to try to pick and choose among international law. If you want to strike Syria because use of chemical weapons violates international law, fine, but you should follow international law in doing so. And the treaties Don't say as much about that, by the way, as what the repercussions are and what the responses are to these things as they might. But I do believe that this tragedy in Syria is getting enough attention that it should be used. Let me phrase it this way. I believe the constructive, enduring legacy of this tragedy could be refinement and use and effectiveness and a revamping or at least tune-up of international law so that it is effective in these cases. The new world order I would like to see is that international law works internationally the way domestic law works domestically. If you look at the Boston Marathon, the tragedy occurred, evidence was gathered, suspects were named, and the response was not to bomb Boston. That would be ridiculous. The response was to get out arrest warrants for the suspects, to mobilize available forces to identify them and then finally capture them, and then to bring them to trial. What would the analogy of that be here? There's clear evidence that chemical weapons were used. There's good evidence that it was at the request or knowledge of Assad. There's an international prohibition on the use of chemical weapons. There are, 169 countries that have signed that. So international law has been broken. We all saw it happen. Can we get some sort of warrant out for his arrest and proceed down that line? Sounds maybe progressive, maybe idealistic, maybe even beyond idealistic. But I think that we need to make progress in that direction to get to the kind of world that we can have, and I think that we would like to have.
We have very little time remaining in the show. Do we
yes.
have time to squeeze in another call, or do we have other callers? Or should we just say goodbye and go around with I know sometimes they go around and let everybody recap quickly.
Okay. I think our callers have said their piece. So we're happy to hear from them. We do have about 4 minutes left here. I'm sure it's on the screen here somewhere. We have less than 3 minutes left. So we will wrap up. Let me just say that to recap some of the topics here, the British Parliament had a rousing debate on Wednesday the 29th for 8 hours on this topic. Their debate style is very different from the debate style we use in our halls of Congress. My opinion is that they get more information out. They listen to each other a little bit better. They're at least in the room hearing each other, and I wonder what we can learn from that. The second point is that John McCain went to a town meeting in Phoenix, Arizona, to hear what his constituents had to say. They were unanimously and strongly against military action, yet he went back and voted in favor of it. And we just have to wonder why he would have substituted his judgment for the views of his constituents. Perhaps he just has more information and a wiser, longer view of this, or perhaps he was motivated some other way. I simply don't know. Much of the talk has been framed as a choice between two options, military force or not. I encourage us to recognize that whenever there are two choices in front of us, we're being blinded by those two choices. If you're asked, would you rather drink Coke or Pepsi, immediately suspect a false dichotomy and ask for some orange juice. I believe we can do this here, and I believe that there are options that sustain peace for a longer time, and so on. And finally, there are some hands-off Syria actions in place. Sally, do you want to recap?
I just wanted to say, I wanted to encourage everybody to call their congresspeople because it seems clear to me that our Congress is not as responsive to the people as the British governing body is. I mean, I think it was pretty astonishing that they voted Cameron down and pretty exciting. But I wish that the United States Congress was as responsive to the United States population. Now, if you're in favor of military intervention, call and tell them that too. But I really encourage people to let them know what you, their constituent, expect them to do because it's important. They're supposed to be representing us. And if they have reasons that they want to do something else, they should be able to tell him to you. And there's a rally in Washington, D.C. tomorrow for people who don't want military action in Syria.
Thank you all for joining us. This is Coffee Party, Politics Done Right. Egberto is out today. This was Lee Beaumont and Sally Swisher. Thank you for joining us. Have a good day. I think, therefore, I vote. Make your investigate the facts.
And not only vote, I call. I go out in the streets. I tell people. I talk to people.
And do your research. So thank you very much. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.